Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the latest mysterious poisoning of another former Russian spy in the UK, this time Colonel Sergei Skripal, a retired Russian military intelligence GRU officer who was one of four prisoners Russia swapped for 10 deep-cover sleeper agents planted by Moscow in the US who were exchanged in 2010. Luke Harding, the former Moscow bureau chief of The Guardian, who was expelled by the Kremlin and is the author of A Very Expensive Poison, The Assassination of Alexander Litvinenko, and his latest book, Collusion, How Russia Helped Trump Win the White House, joins us. We'll discuss whether this latest hit involving a mysterious unknown substance was ordered by Putin as a way to bolster his credentials with right-wing nationalists ahead of the March 18 presidential election he's expected to win. We'll also assess what kind of protection former Russian spies are provided by the UK security services, given the record of high-profile hits by the Kremlin on British soil. Then we'll examine the results of the Italian election that have alarmed the EU as illiberal right-wing regimes sympathetic to Putin gain ground in Europe, with Italy's centre-right five-star movement getting the most votes at 32%, and they are expected to form a coalition with the far-right Anti-Immigrant League, which captured 17.5% of the vote. Ruth Ben-Ghiat, a professor of history and Italian studies at New York University who writes on fascism, racism, and authoritarian rulers, joins us to discuss her article at CNN. In Italy's elections, the fascists did scarily well. Then finally, with growing concern from Republicans at home and from leaders around the world that Donald Trump is triggering a trade war because of his snap decision to impose tariffs on steel and aluminum imports, we will speak with Matt Gold, a professor of law at Fordham University, where he teaches international trade law. He previously served as the Deputy Assistant U.S. Trade Representative for North America in the Executive Office of the President, and we will discuss whether Speaker Ryan and others will be able to convince Trump to walk back his plan as Trump threatens to double down, pressuring NAFTA partners, Canada and Mexico. And joining us now from London is Luke Harding, who's a journalist, writer, and award-winning foreign correspondent for The Guardian. Between 2007 and 2011, he was The Guardian's Moscow bureau chief before the Kremlin expelled him from the country in the first case of its kind since the Cold War. His books include A Very Expensive Poison, The Assassination of Alexander Litvinenko, and Putin's War with the West, The Snowden Files, The Inside Story of the World's Most Wanted Man, Mafia State, How One Reporter Became an Enemy of the Brutal New Russia, and WikiLeaks, Inside Julian Assange's War on Secrecy. Two of his books have been made in Hollywood movies, and his books have been translated into 30 languages. His latest book just out is Collusion, How Russia Helped Trump Win the White House. Welcome to Background Briefing, Luke Harding.
Hello.
So there's been yet another poisoning of a Russian spy in London. He was found unconscious on a park bench with a young woman. Again, it seems brazen if the same author is involved. And what's the suspicion at your end?
Well, it's too early to tell precisely what has happened. We know who this is. It's someone called Sergei Skripal. He's a former Russian spy who was swapped famously in 2010 for 10 sleeper agents who were working undercover in the United States, including Anna Chapman, who became very famous. And he has been living in the UK since 2010. He used to work for the GRU, which is Russian military intelligence, the same guys who allegedly hacked the 2016 US election. And he's pretty low profile. I know most people in this world. I haven't met him. And he was living actually not in London, but in Salisbury in the southwest of the UK, in an unassuming house, keeping a low profile.
So, but of course, you wrote the book on Alexander Litvinenko, A Very Expensive Poison, The Assassination of Alexander Litvinenko and Putin's War with the West. That was incredibly brazen. How would you rate this in terms of its... I mean, it feels like the authors or the intellectual authors of these attacks want it both ways. They want to send the signal that we're ruthless and we're going to get you no matter where you're hiding, and two, we're not really leaving our fingerprints, even though, wink, wink, and a nod, you know it's us.
Well, I mean, that's exactly right. If you look at the Alexander Litvinenko case, he was poisoned with a radioactive cup of tea containing polonium when he met two Kremlin assassins in a bar in a central London hotel, literally on the doorstep of the American embassy in Britain. And Putin's attitude was to say officially, look, this has nothing to do with us. You're all crazy. But then to kind of wink and nod at the Russian population and subsequently to give one of the killers, Andrei Lugovoy, a state award. Now, the context of this case, this latest case involving Sergei Skripal, is as follows, that Vladimir Putin is going into a presidential election. Everyone knows he's going to win. There is pretty apathetic mood in Russia about the whole contest. And of course, a case like this, ambiguous, not ambiguous, plays well with the base and with the kind of nationalistic mood in the country. So we don't know what happened, but there is a context.
Well, the history, though, is pretty interesting. They used to just kill their spies with a bullet in the back of the head, but this fellow was sentenced in August of 2006 in Russia to 13 years in jail for spying for the UK, convicted of high treason in the form of espionage. And Russian prosecutors said he'd been, I'm just actually reading from your article, Luke, he's been paid $100,000 by MI6. So let's talk about the spy swap. What did the West get in exchange, or what did the Russians get in exchange, I should say?
Well, actually, I was in Moscow at the time, and I remember it pretty well because I wrote a fairly sort of teasing article about Anna Chapman, who you'll remember was the most glamorous of these Russian sleeper agents, posing as a real estate developer in New York, but actually trying to get secrets for Moscow. So she went back. The other spies went back. Putin had a patriotic sing-song with them and welcomed them home as returning heroes. It was a little bit hard to figure out what precisely these spies had done. The FBI had been onto them all along. But what the UK got back were clearly, it appears, assets, agents who had been supplying them with sensitive information, of whom Sergei Skripal was one. And the whole thing was redolent of Cold War melodrama because The Russians were flown to Vienna. There was a swap on the tarmac, and then they went to the UK. And I actually just spoke to one of them, Igor Sutyagin, who was sitting next to Skripal on the flight home. And I was saying, well, what was Skripal like? And he said, well, Skripal was talking mainly about his family. Bear in mind, he'd been locked up for a long time. He was very keen to see them. And he said that he thought that Skripal's family were his most important joy.
And they had already been in the UK?
Well, no, they were imprisoned in Russia, and they were then bundled onto this plane that no one told them anything, flown to Vienna, and then exfiltrated to the UK. And Sutyagin actually has a fairly high profile. He's attached to a think tank called the Royal United Services Institute, which is quite prestigious, based in London. I've done events with him. He's well known, but Sergei Skripal, the man who appears to have been poisoned or has fallen ill, was not so high profile. You didn't see him. He didn't do events, and I think he had more or less disappeared.
But given the track record of Litvinenko and Bereshovsky, the former media baron, his death was pretty mysterious. How much is I assume, even though MI6 ran these agents, MI5's job would be to protect them, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, there are quite a few defectors living in the UK. I mean, Skripal is not the only one. The most famous of them, I think, is Oleg Gordievsky, who was the sort of KGB designate head of station in London. And he had been shipping secrets of British intelligence from 1974 and was recalled to Moscow in 1985 and was bundled out of the country in the back of a Saab car by MI6. They got him out. Now, He lives in Surrey. He's not that hard to find, and so far he's intact. So it's quite hard to sort of to figure out the method here. And when I saw Gordievsky, there were no police on the door. I mean, obviously there were kind of security measures, but I think the bottom line is you cannot protect people like Skripal all of the time. I mean, they have to have a life. And also people forget. I mean, 2010 is quite a long time ago, and maybe after a period in exile, you you think that you are safe. But the Litvinenko case teaches us one thing. Litvinenko fled Russia in 2000. He was poisoned in 2006. And that is that the Kremlin has a long memory.
Well, I actually went to KGB headquarters in Moscow to talk to them about Gordievsky. I was working on a movie project with Mel Gibson a long time ago, and they were he was not their favorite guy. They referred to him as Mr. G, which is a childish way of talking about a young kid sort of pooing in their pants, for want of a better description.
So, yeah, I mean the Kremlin's view is very clear of people who pass secrets to the outside, particularly to the Americans and to the British, that they are traitors. And the code, the sort of spy code, the Soviet spy code, and it's still the Russian code, is that the fate of traitors is to be liquidated, and that you understand that when you join one of these organizations, that if you betray it, then there is a death sentence. Now we know in Litvinenko's case, because there was a public inquiry, which reported back in 2016, that Vladimir Putin personally probably approved, that's the quote from the judge, probably approved the operation to kill Litvinenko. In other words, these operations are sanctioned at the very top of the state by the presidential administration. Now, we don't want to get ahead of ourselves. We don't know what happened to Sergei Skripal. It may be a different case. There may be a different context. But Putin's attitude to people who betray the motherland is unambiguous.
Right, but the use of whatever agents. I mean, the KGB had a division that developed all kinds of toxins. And obviously, you mentioned polonium, not a toxin, but an exotic poison, let's shall we say. Is there any indication? Because the local medical authorities didn't know what happened. These people were found, were they not, on a bus bench, both unconscious, him and the colonel and a young woman in her 30s?
Yeah, we really don't know. This is on Sunday afternoon. There are eyewitnesses who said that he looked odd, was staring at the sky. But also, if the Litvinenko case is any guide, if it is some kind of hit or murder attempt, it's often very hard to find out what the poison may be. In Litvinenko's case, polonium had never been seen before in the UK, United States. You need a nuclear reactor to produce it. And Geiger counters don't identify it because it emits alpha radiation. And I think it was seen as the perfect invisible weapon. It's tiny, it's invisible, and a microdose of this thing will kill you. So if this has been done professionally, I think it'll be hard to identify. Now, of course, it could be something else. We just don't know at this stage.
So in the context then of the election, clearly Putin has what's called, what he calls, rather euphemistically, a managed democracy. What do you think of the chances of anything happening to Sobchak's daughter? One of the more extraordinary things about Sobchak's murder, and he was Putin's mentor, and it was one of the few times that Putin has, I think perhaps the only time that Putin has broken down in tears at his funeral. Nevertheless, Sobchak's widow, and of course his daughter is running against Putin, and she sort of asked permission in a way, but some people think that she's a sort of useful idiot for Putin, so I'm not sure. Well, where do you come down on that, Luke Harding?
Well, Ksenia Sobchak, she is running against Vladimir Putin, and she's smart, she's glamorous, she's telegenic, but also I think she's systemic, which is the Russian word for it. In other words, if the Kremlin wants you to take part in an election, it will allow you, or perhaps even encourage you. And in this case, I think Ksenia Sobchak's role is to inject color into what otherwise is a very dull contest, and to give the sort of the impression of a competitive race. But if they don't want you, they won't let you. And the most formidable opposition leader in Russia is the anti-corruption campaigner Alexei Navalny. Now, he's been locked up. He's been barred from standing. They wouldn't let him register. And it's clear to me that were he allowed to stand, probably he wouldn't beat Putin. That's just impossible. But he would attract significant support in Moscow and St. Petersburg and from the disaffected middle classes. Now, he can't run. He's called for a boycott. But this is not an election in any meaningful sense of the word. It's a decorative exercise rather than a real one.
But the last thing Putin wants, though, is a boycott. I mean, that's what he's afraid of with Navalny, isn't it? And that's Sobchak's choice, right?
Sobchak doesn't want a boycott. Sobchak wants people to vote for her. There's also a kind of communist candidate as well. But But it's fake. I mean, in the same way that sort of 300 years ago, Catherine the Great would famously go past villages which were pasteboard and show with sort of happy peasants who were kind of dressed up in clothes given to them an hour before her carriage rolled by. This is just an exercise in show. It's not substantial. And Putin really, he's been in power for 18 years. He's gonna be re-elected for another 6 years. And this is an era. You can call it dictatorship. You can call it one-party rule. You can call it a personalist system. But he's not going away anytime soon. And I think I can confidently predict that he will outlast Donald Trump, Theresa May, and practically every leader in Europe.
Well, just in closing there, back to subjects. Widow, she was on the BBC recently talking about her daughter and about her husband and his relationship with Putin and his mysterious death. And there was an autopsy done which had no credibility. She ordered a second autopsy but sent the results abroad for safekeeping. And she said on camera that essentially this is my insurance policy and that in Russia today, things are extremely scary. I'm not paraphrasing it very well, but the implication that I got from Sobchak's widow was that she also talked about him breaking down Putin in tears, was that somehow this wasn't necessarily authorized by Putin, that there are shadowy figures even more powerful than Putin who wanted Putin in there but didn't want Sobchak as Putin's advisor and mentor because he was too liberal. That was the impression that I got. Does that make any sense to you?
Well, it's one version, but the reality is that it's almost impossible to tell. There have been scores of opposition MPs, critics, and troublesome journalists like Anna Politkovskaya, and also Alexander Litvinenko was a journalist as well, who was very outspoken against Putin, who have met mysterious ends. They've been shot, they've been poisoned, their planes have crashed, and it's almost impossible to find out definitively what happened inside Russia. But I think the reason the Litvinenko case is so important is it happened outside, and there was a proper dispassionate investigation by Scotland Yard, who did a painstaking job, and by the UK government. And we got a reckoning. We got the truth, which was this was an operation by the FSB, Putin's old spy agency. So anything is possible. Sometimes the Kremlin's hand is visible. Sometimes it's not visible. Sometimes it's other parties. But I suspect that given the high-profile nature of this latest case involving Sergei Skripal, that the UK authorities will take it very seriously.
Well, Luke Harding, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
Thank you. And again, I've been speaking with Luke Harding, who's a journalist, writer, and award-winning foreign correspondent for The Guardian. Between 2007 and 2011, he was The Guardian's Moscow bureau chief before the Kremlin expelled him from the country in the first case of its kind since the Cold War. His books include A Very Expensive Poison, The Assassination of Alexander Litvinenko, and Putin's War with the West, The Snowden Files, The Inside Story of the World's Most Wanted Man, Mafia State, How One Reporter Became an Enemy of the Brutal New Russia, and WikiLeaks, Inside Julian Assange's War on Secrecy. Two have been made into Hollywood movies, and his books have been translated into 30 languages. His latest book is Collusion, How Russia Helped Trump Win the White House. We're going to take a brief station break, back examining the results of the Italian elections, where the right is in ascendancy and the left is in retreat.